This Week in Radio Tech, War Stories, Episode 200, is brought to you by the Telos Zip 1 IP Audio Codec, low-latency, high-quality stereo audio over private networks or the public internet. The Telos Zip 1 is the best way to hear from there. On the web at telos-systems.com. On the eve of the 2014 Winter Olympics, Westwood One's VP of Engineering, Mitch Glider, joins us live from Sochi, Russia. We find out about the studios built in just a few days and the technologies employed to bring live commentary and reports from across the Olympic venues. This Week in Radio Tech starts now. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's show number 200! Yay! We've made it a long ways. What is this, 4 years worth of This Week in Radio Techs, or just a little over 4 years. We took a short hiatus a couple summers ago. And this is the show where we talk about radio technology, broadcasting, audio, the things that broadcast radio engineers have to do to get the sound out to lots of folks, make it sound good, and keep it all working. And sometimes we even go do difficult work out in the trenches. And that's what this show is all about. This is show number 200. Every show that's divided by 10, we call it a War Stories episode. So today, have we got a war story? It's from a war that's happening right now. So hang on, I'm going to introduce our guest in just a minute. Our show is brought to you by the Telos Zip 1. Telos happens to be my employer, and I deeply appreciate their sponsorship of the show. And the Zip 1 is an IP audio codec. We'll hear a bit more about it later. I'm excited to be here, and I know another guy is too. Chris Tobin has been with us ever since day one. Hey, Chris, welcome in. Glad you're here. Is Chris muted?
I believe Chris is muted.
All right.
Yes, it's interesting. I should be back now. There we go. Well, thank you for that introduction. I appreciate it. And it's good to see that Mitch is doing well in Russia as well, despite all the craziness that's going on over there. Oh, so, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, hear you great. Are you at an undisclosed location?
No, not undisclosed. It's well-publicized. I'm at DSI RF Systems. It's a systems integrator for RF studios, transmitters, IP, you name it. I'm working on a project with them, and it's several projects. One of them is a wireless type project here. It's a wireless video over IP cellular. It's pretty cool. And a couple other things involve several buildings in Manhattan as well. And just behind me, over my shoulder, and Mitch has probably seen this video, he recognizes this. This is a traffic camera. So those of you in the audience who watch television and see traffic reports, these are the cameras. This company does the support and design for that. So for those in New York City, Philadelphia, and Boston, you have metro and shadow traffic. L.A. and Chicago, it's the same thing.
You know, with those traffic cameras, and you know, once in a while I get to do weather on a TV station in Nashville, traffic cameras, I don't know, 60, 70 of them all around Nashville. And, of course, they'll zoom in on accidents and such. But I love it when TV stations do that thing where they've recorded or they watch maybe a split on the interstate or a merge, and they look and see, you know, who tries to cheat, who gets around, you know, who takes the chances and almost catches an 18-wheeler or something. You ever see them do that on TV in New York?
Once in a while, yes, they'll do a highlight like that, but usually during inclement weather, just the spread, like this week with the snow and ice that we've had. There've been a few video shots where you saw a car, you know, sort of running off the road and getting back on and just hitting a van.
Jeez. All right. Hey, well, let's get right to our guest. Mitch Glider is with us from Sochi, Russia, at the site of the 2014 Winter Olympics. Mitch, welcome in. I'm glad you're here.
Well, thanks for having me. I totally appreciate the opportunity to be on the 200 show, and certainly always seem good to see Chris, and I'm happy to be here. It's the certainly the end of my day. It's about 11:15 Sochi time.
Ah, at night. You know, it's bedtime.
Well, that's a relative term, my friend.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, we're gonna jump right into this. I want to hear some of Mitch's frustrations and victories. Mitch, you have been posting on Facebook ever since you got there. You know, Sochi day one, Sochi day two, Sochi day 10. And you've got stories anywhere from the hotel room and hot and cold water to dirty clothes to ISDN to IP connections. First of all, I guess we ought to set it up and find out why you're there. You said you're using some NBC Wi-Fi, but I don't think you're working for NBC. So tell me, what brings Mitch Glider to Sochi besides the obvious Olympic reason?
Okay, well, it's kind of a long, winding story, but I'm here with Westwood One Sports, and I am the engineer in charge, along with Zach Akey, who is my right-hand man, and absolutely couldn't be doing any of this without this. Zach runs the Westwood One CBS facility in Washington, D.C. So anyway, we have the Olympic rights for NBC, from NBC for radio, to do the Olympics. And it just so happens that we also have other products that we do with them, like NBC Sports Radio Network and NBC News. So it's kind of a separate deal. So while we're here, we are treated as, I would say, first cousins. We're in their space in the IBC. All of our telecom and construction needs and services are coordinated through NBC. Mike Eby is the senior producer here representing my Westwood One Sports, and that's really how it goes. So we're kind of like cousins in this particular remote.
All right, so you're there supporting the Westwood One radio networks. Now, boy, Westwood One, that's had a couple of changing of hands lately. At the moment, you guys are is Cumulus still working out the deal to purchase Westwood One, or is that a done deal?
No, that's a done deal, and we are now under the Cumulus umbrella, and it's in the early stages, so we don't want to spend a lot of time on that at this moment, I would think, but just needless to say, the wheels are in motion, and I'm here to do this particular job at this particular time, and I have a great team back in New York that's carrying on without me, as Mr. Tobin knows, and I'm focused on the remote.
Okay, so when I got to visit you some months ago in New York, in your office, and you described the preparation work that you and your team would be doing in New York, the staging, the construction, the testing of systems, would you take us through a bit of that? You may have done that on a previous show, but I'd like to understand it again, what you did to get ready to go to Sochi so that when you unpacked everything, it was very likely to work.
Well, that's a great question. Essentially, what we did is we took the as-built documents that Zach Akey prepared for me while he was in London, because we sent a similar system out. I wasn't on that remote, but I engineered it from New York. And we evaluated that document, both everything from Visio drawings to layout, what we could do to improve it, to expanding equipment, things that we need to do differently, problems that they had with, let's say, the RJ21 multi-pair cables that we use for distribution, that type of thing. We then basically analyzed what equipment we needed to purchase and add to the existing system that we had, made the proper requests for the purchases, and it did go pretty well. Eric Weiler was he's the senior vice president of engineering and operations, supported me with that and helped me get the funds that I needed. We worked with Howard Denaroff, who's the senior executive producer. Might have his title wrong, but Mr. Denaroff is in charge of Westwood One Sports. And we stage everything in a large area, down to the last detail, monitors, computers, racks. We simulate things. We bring in ISDN lines back there. We simulate things as the best of our abilities. We do as much programming and pre-wiring as possible. Zach came up and visited, I believe, twice prior to the shipment to help go over the system with me and my technicians. And essentially, right before it was ready to ship, we did the kick the plug trick. And what that means is, without any warning or any regard for equipment, we pulled the twist lock out of the 220 plug out of the electrical socket and took everything down and then plugged it back in and made sure that everything works. Now, I will just say that everything was fine. And we had an experience where the tech power went down unexpectedly. We were not warned here. And because of that preparation, other than us worrying about whether we did, say the word, Zach, on the Cisco router.
Save run.
We were doing a ton of Cisco work. And Zach was saying, boy, I hope that Mr. Montero, who did our Cisco work, did a save run. This way when it powered up. So everything went well. So that's really how the preparation went. It was a lot of just reviewing the existing documents, adding to them, and we do everything from Visio drawings to for the elevations and the layout to very complex lookup table style spreadsheets for all the various wiring.
I like that part about kicking the plug out. That you've got to have some confidence that the gear that you're using, you know, maybe isn't performing a write cycle at that point, or if it is, the gear is designed to work around that. When you did that kick the plug out, what sort of thing maybe were you expecting to find not come up back up correctly next time, or what actually did need some help coming back up, aside from the Cisco save run?
Well, you know, when we did it in New York, we knew that the save run had been performed. You know, to be honest with you, with the equipment that I'm using, everything from, you know, a 32KD to Telus HX1s to the Zips to the Comrex accesses, you know, except, I'm going to say, except for the normal, you know, Windows barking at me when I started it back up that, you know, it wasn't happy with the way that we shut down the computers, that type of thing. We had no failures. So therefore, when this real world incident happened here, at the IBC, you know, me and Zach looked at each other with our eyes popping out of our head. And to be honest with you, I had the utmost confidence that everything was going to be all right. But Mr. Akey over here was the gentleman working with one of our IT guys remotely. And the first thing out of his mouth was hoping that things were saved properly. And the story was that we called up this gentleman and woke him up in the middle of the night. And his answer to us was, "Well, I don't see a reason why I wouldn't." So we had to wait about a half an hour to find out if he had a reason why he wouldn't have done that save. But everything came up great. Everything's been performing either perfectly or even in a lot of cases exceeding our expectations.
Cool. Now, maybe you could – I've seen a few pictures of what you've been doing there in Sochi, and that was really the first clue I had as to the scope of your work. You've got a few audio consoles and reporting workstations, and you've got a couple big equipment racks full of gear, I guess, for all the audio I/O back home. Can you kind of take us through what either the rooms are or what the capabilities are?
Sure. We have an engineering area that's approximately 10 feet by about 14 feet. Mr. Tobin knows exactly what I'm talking about because, yes, it's the same size as Salt Lake. That's where we keep a 32KD audio router. That's where we keep various McCurdy meters and test sets to look at things. All four of the Telus Extreme ISDNs are there. The two Zips are there. The two Comrex accesses are there. And, you know, the transmission rack. Everything is broken out from that area with RJ21 25-pair Cat5e. We use the same concept that the telecom and IT people use, zoned Cat5, six LAN cables within, and then they all break out to essentially what are breakout boxes with 12 RJ21s on them because we run two cables to each. And we had them custom-made by Whirlwind, not because they weren't available on the market. You could buy them, but they're plastic and they're cheesy. And Whirlwind, for whoever knows the Whirlwind company, you know, they make things bulletproof and stage ready. So we have a large long form studio that has a traditional control room in a studio, and we have an SAS SL16 in there, and we have the typical turrets for on off cough and headphone control and SMPTE in the studio itself. And you know, there's some bells and whistles in there. You know, we are using the ICM32 intercom heads, enhanced intercom heads, and they do everything from key up and listen for listening for standard four wire intercoming. We also have two small read in type stations that are just really Dixon newsroom mixers with a Comrex HX1 on them. Thank you very much. And then we have another, what we call a short form studio, which is the same setup. An interesting thing that I think everybody would be really intrigued by is we're using the enhanced multi-panel soft heads by SAS, and these are essentially single output controllers and XY controllers with volume controls and presets to control the outputs. And rather than carrying a lot of hardware to make these routing changes for the non-SAS consoles, We're using these multi-panels quite extensively, and we're extremely pleased with them. It's kind of the heart of how we route things around. So that's really the idea. It's two read-in positions. It's a short-form studio that does updates. It's a combo studio, and then we have the long-form studio. And we're airing out to 350 affiliates, including SiriusXM. And we have a wrap-up show every night. We have three two-minute updates an hour, 24 hours a day, as well as quite a bit of hockey play-by-play programming. And everybody can go to westwoodone.com, I believe, to get any kind of scheduling and any kind of other kind of highlights.
So, okay, I've got the idea now of your broadcast center with your workstations and the long-form studio where there are several mic positions, audio console there, of course, and the couple of racks worth of gear. By the way, if you want to see pictures of this, go to Facebook and go to Mitch Glider. I don't guess you probably have to friend Mitch Glider to see the pictures. I don't think they're that private, so you can probably see them there. I've shared a few of those myself. So if you're on Facebook and you're my friend, you can go there and see those pictures as well. So now, Mitch, one thing I'm wondering about is, you know, the Olympics tend to all be, you know, all these broadcast companies have a broadcast center, but then they have a lot of remote gear out of the different venues for the different sports. You mentioned hockey play-by-play. Is hockey the only thing, the only event where you've got connections out to, or are there other venues in the area that you also are bringing live audio back from?
That's a great question. You know, there's two ways. For the venues, depending on what events Westwood One wants to cover with commentary positions, whether it's live or just to cover them to tape, we get what's called a commentary position, which is essentially a four-wire that is brought back into my my space, my engineering space, and is entered into the router like you would enter any other four-wire system with an intercom, key up and listen, talk down. But obviously, all that audio is also available to come up on all the consoles, generating mixed minuses. So we have five wired venues, and I'm going to name the ones that I know, and I bet you Zach could chime in for the ones that I'll remember. We have two hockey venues. We have the we have the Alpine Skiing Center up in the mountains. We have the figure skating. He's giving it to me right here. Thank you, Zach. We have two hockeys, a figure skating, the long speed track for skating, and alpine ski. So those have commentary positions, which means they're four wires. OBS, through the magic of fiber and a really great system, gets them back to me in copper. Now, the interesting thing is there are a lot of other venues that we do want to cover, but at $18,000 a four wire, one has to be, you know, wonder, is it really worth it to get all the four wires? So So what we've been doing is we've been ordering unequipped commentary positions. And in this particular case, we've been using the Access Portable with a 4G air card that was provided to us by Cell Hire. And I'd like to give a shout out to Cell Hire because these people really know their business. We're familiar with the Russian telecom system and provided me with not only SIM cards for my iPhones that are working beautifully, but these 4G USB air cards. So the typical setup, let's say, at the opening and closing ceremonies, which I was actually present for the rehearsals the other day. We had a Comrex access with the mixer expander, three headsets, and the connectivity comes back to an access rack unit, which then we treat as a venue. So you could just imagine that we have the five hardwired four wires, and then we consider the access one, we call it, a four wire. And then we have another access that runs back to New York that we use for full-time four wire communication between the engineering and the production. Gotcha. So that's really the whole thing. We have the hardwired venues, and then we have the accesses. Now, we have four accesses floating around between the coast and the mountains, and it's up to Mike Eby to decide which talent and which personality goes to either cover a live event or to do an on-site interview, any of those things. And we have as many as three or four excellent producers back here that take in the tape. You know, I use that expression, tape, thank you. and set up clips for the short form or segments for the long form like that. So it's kind of like this moving machine. of information coming in. And one of the jobs we have here in engineering is, Michael, say, can you check in, you know, Alpine Ski, just make sure they're sounding good, because we want to take them for a live hit on one of the updates, but we want you to confirm that the connection is good and the levels are good. And so I'll key him up on my intercom and say, hey, Joe, how you doing? And say, sound good. How you hearing me? Great. How am I hearing? Okay, great. I'll intercom into Mike Eby. Say, Mike, Joe checked in. He sounds great, and he's ready to go. Mike will pot him up on his board. He'll take over the mix minus. He'll IFB him down the line in queue, and then, you know, away he goes. Just like, if you guys were doing a talk show and you got phoners coming in, you know, you put them on the offline bus or you put them in queue. Same thing.
So, Mitch, hey, it's Chris.
Yes.
With the access as your commentators drop in, curious, what's the delay like? You know, you're using the local 4G, I guess it's GSM out there. How much of a delay do you encounter, or is it, minimal?
Chris, it is so minimal that it's just cool. exceeded our expectations. And when Zach walks past me again, I'm going to ask him what algorithm we're using on that access. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I will tell you that these particular 4G cards, we're on the Megaphone carrier, okay, and we can't get it to perform badly. And now, Mr. Phil Attenberg, who I know a lot of you people watching my business for a long time, he made a comment on my Facebook. He says, do your happy dance now, Mr. Glider, because when the 500,000 or a million people all fly in and they all want to get on their Megaphone carrier, let me know how you're making it out. So we'll see. But as of right now, the air cards are being used for two things, for the access and for laptops. And so far, they've performed amazing.
Oh, good. Okay, I was just curious, because I know with a lot of carriers I've worked with, the algorithm itself has minimal delay, but then the carrier themselves introduce it on the IP side. So I was just curious.
Chris, this is you as being like one of the pioneers in this. This IP codec, use it now as opposed to 10 years from now. I'm telling you, you'd be giving me a Tobin grin ear to ear.
Well, yeah, we did some crazy stuff at Salt Lake City with the Olympics. Remember that,
Zach? What is the algorithm that we're using on the access for the portables?
On the access,
yes.
For the portables, it varies.
Okay, he'll get back to me. He'll give me an example. So that's the story with the Axis. Is this the time of the show where I make a joke? So let me tell you how the Telos Zip Portable works.
I didn't know we had a Zip Portable.
Now, did you say that or did I say that? And whose show is this?
So you're saying that you'd like a Zip Portable, and it'd be nice if it worked as well. If when it comes out, it'd be nice if it works as well as a Comrex, right?
Well, I will tell you this. We're using the Zips as what some people think is our secondary transmit path. It mirrors all four of our ISDN paths. We have four dedicated paths going to New York, and we just call them long form, short form, play by play, and aux. And it doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going down them. It just means after so many years of doing the Olympics between here and New York that, certain things, we've all been on the same team for a long time. So if you can imagine, we're using, the zips, zip one left and right as, long form, short form, and zip two as backup for, play by play and aux. And all I can tell you is that we periodically test the ISDNs, and we have New York send back, 880 or whatever. And obviously, whatever comes back on the ISDNs also comes back on the zips, because it's mirrored coming and going. And that's how we have. So that's how we're using the zips as a true backup. And I will tell you that the zips beat the ISDN in L2-6448. The zip is beating the ISDN. It's a flam, but it's the zip that's getting here first.
Wow. Well, now that, yeah, I mean, we know that both technologies work, and we know that ISDN, can stay up for hours, days, weeks, and even months. People use ISDN as a full-time studio transmitter link in some cases. So ISDN is the kind of product that's nearing the end of the sunset of its life. And IP is really coming into its own in terms of reliability and availability. It'll only get better. But in your situation, you're getting more consistent quality and connectivity through the IP connection from Sochi to New York than you are with the ISDN from Sochi to New York.
That is correct. That's correct. And you know what? There's not enough time on this show for me to get into the ISDN situation here. But I'll make it brief. When we first got here, they came up perfectly, and everything was great. And I'll just say that since then, they've been up, they've been down. We can, you know, you have to connect both B2 channels here in this with this particular switch configuration. And we had a situation where I really needed three ISDNs, and if I didn't have a fourth, it would be fine. Now I have four Zephyr Extremes here, and they're not new, and we use them a lot, but they seemed to be in good shape. And some ISDN lines would work on some codecs sometimes. Now, I could take an ISDN in my hand, and I could put it into ISDN 1, and I'd try to make it work, have New York Dialos, wouldn't work. I'd put it in the codec underneath me, it would work. I'd put it in the next one, it wouldn't work. And that's, you know what, and I'm just going to end the story there with the ISDNs because it's just been an up and down thing. And my management wants the ISDNs to be the primary. And that is that for that. 3-second rule, Chris Tobin. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Now, all I can tell you is based on our statistics that we've seen. Now, as you know, the Zip has an excellent statistical metrics in terms of how the unit is performing, as opposed to the audio metering, which not so good, Kurt.
Okay.
So my constructive criticism for you guys is work on the metering, but the statistics are great. I think Zach might have told me at one point that the Zip was up for approximately 4 or 5 days, something like that, without so much as a hiccup. And Zach was running recordings at an hour at a time to try to find a dropout and couldn't. Yesterday, we did a full technical rehearsal where we were feeding various studios down the line, and Howard Denneroff was the far end, and anybody that knows Howard Denneroff knows that this gentleman has extremely good ears. He can hear the difference between L2 and L3. Okay, he has amazing ears, and he was bouncing back and forth between the Zip, and I heard him say on more than one occasion it either sounds the same or I think it sounds better. Okay, this is not a plug just because you guys are sponsoring this show. I want everybody to understand something. If it was up to me, the Zips would be the primary, and the ISDNs would be the back. I am just thrilled to death. Now, we do have a great internet connection. We have a dedicated 5-meg DIA, and obviously back at the broadcast center, we got a huge pipe. Zach did an amazing job of setting up external NATs, and bringing them in. Did a real clean. I mean, there's a lot of other ways to do things, and I won't even begin to get into them because I'm not at that level to explain things. But I will tell you that I know enough to know that they just sound great. And you know what? Tomorrow we're actually going to up the ante a little bit. We're going to try to push the sound quality and the algorithm a little bit, and see what we can do since it's the backup.
Well, actually, you bring up a good question. What algorithm and bitrate are you using now on the IP connection on the Zip?
Okay, on the Zip, Zach gave me some cheat notes here. We're using AAC 128 and AAC ELD, AAC LD.
Okay. So you're using a mixture of these for different purposes. And AAC at 128 is, is perfectly adequate audio quality. It'd be interesting to try 256 and see how that works for you, because that AAC at 256 is, that's the same rate that you when you buy, you know, something from iTunes. That's what you get AAC at 256. The low delay, you give up a little bit of quality. Can you hear it? I don't know. If you do low delay at a higher bit rate, then it all works out to be about the same. And then the ELD, that's a codec that is made. That's enhanced low delay, so it's quick, but it's also uses the spectral band replication, and the top speed on that is 64 kilobits. So, in fact, it's a pretty small range. I think it goes from 48 to 64 kilobits is the available range. My point is AAC ELD is great if you are really bandwidth limited at your location, because it'll work great at 64 kilobits, and it's low delay as well.
We are not bandwidth limited, so you will probably get a call from Mr. Akey tomorrow. Because I think that since Zach is the one that is really handling the management of the IP and of this remote, I think that you're obviously extremely knowledgeable. Listen, Zach wants to push the element, as I do. I'm a little bit more conservative along the lines of it's working now, leave it alone. And Zach is like, I'm not going to drive it off the road. What are you worried about? You know, so... that's not a good invitation of him, by the way. So I think we're going to give you a call tomorrow about that. But really, to put it in a nutshell, that's performing excellently. The axis between New York and Sochi is also doing very well. But in fairness, doesn't sound as good. But also, we are keeping it in a very low mode for dual mono purposes. It's only for intercom. But we do have to reboot it a couple once in a while. Can't leave it up 24/7 without it sounding a little bit a little funny sometimes. But that's not a knock on them. It's excellent, and we're very happy with both products. And we do not see another remote like this in the future where the IP will not be the primary, and we'll bring an ISDN or two just in case we're having problems. And that's Mr. Akey's opinion, and that's my opinion.
Cool. Hey, folks, you are watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 200th episode. We've been here for about 4 years. Chris Tobin is with us. Tom Ray and Chris Tarr both, unfortunately, are on other assignments right now. They couldn't be with us. But Mitch Glider is here. He is live in Sochi, Russia, the site of the 2014 Winter Olympics, just about ready to start. And they were having a rehearsal of the opening ceremonies today that Mitch was at. It's late at night there. It is almost midnight where Mitch Glider is at. Our show is brought to you by my employer, and I appreciate this, Telos, and the Telos Zip 1. Mitch was talking about the Zip 1 earlier. This is the IP audio codec that, as we say, drops JAWS, not audio. Well, okay, you do have to give it a good connection, but you can drop a few packets here and there, and it still sounds just fine. The Zip 1 is, as we said, an IP audio codec. And what does a codec do? For those of you who may be new to this, you feed audio into it, analog or live wire, and coming soon, the AES version. You feed audio into it, and it codes the audio according to whatever algorithm you set it up for, MPEG Layer 2 or AAC or AAC low delay. You can also have some very basic throwback algorithms like G722 and even G711. So it's compatible with SIP phone calls. Yeah, you can actually make a SIP phone call to a Zip 1. And then there's also an optional codec if you want Aptx, well known in the broadcast world. Aptx Enhanced is a codec that's optionally available for the Zip 1. The Zip 1 also makes it easy to connect one place to another. For, let's say, less technical users, you can go to the front panel of the Zip 1, look up a buddy on your buddy list or your contact list, and just push the connect button. And through the benefits of the free-to-use Zip server, you get NAT traversal and presence information. You don't have to know the IP address of the party that you're calling if they also have a Zip 1. You just connect them together. You can change the coding algorithm and the bit rate on the fly. You don't have to disconnect, reconnect, reboot, none of that like you do with some other codecs. You can change those things on the fly if you find out, hey, we've got a great connection. You know what? I think I'll bump this up to AAC at 320 kilobits per second and get the best quality through that we can. You also don't have that kind of option with ISDN. You know, ISDN with a single BRI line, two bearer channels, you're limited to 128 kilobits. And sometimes on international connections, you're limited to 112 kilobits per second using AAC or MP3 or Layer 2. So the possibilities with IP are quite a bit better. You've got a lot more options for providers, and you've got more options for bit rates that you can use. I want to take just a minute. We're going to ask Mitch to describe his setup just a bit more, but I've got a Zip One right here in my rack. And you know what? I'm wondering if I can screen share. You know, we've tried this before, and it doesn't always work, but let's give it a try, and maybe I can't. Oh, well. Tell you what, we'll try it another time. I wanted to show you how long this thing had been connected. This Zip One right here is connected to an office in Hong Kong, and we just got it connected. They just got a port forward done, which seemed to be very helpful to the connection on their end, and it's been connected now for 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours. There are a few packet drops and losses on the public internet. We can't help that, but the AAC-ELD algorithm puts up with about 5% packet loss and conceals those losses. The folks at Fraunhofer say you either can't hear them or they're very tough to notice. And I've been sitting here listening. In fact, they've got it looped back, so I'm sending my audio to them, and they're sending it right back to me. And let's crank it up a little bit here. So this is what I'm listening. This is what I'm sending and what I'm listening to. Hong Kong. This is going two directions, to Hong Kong and back. It's some bossa. It's some hip bossa music there. The point is there, it's easy, it works well, and besides making a connection using our Zip server, there's other possibilities too, like SIP or NASIP, and also RTP and symmetric RTP. You can send a stream to it, and it'll automatically return a stream back if you know the IP address to send it to. So those are a few advantages of the Telos Zip One IP codec. It does so much. Send contact closures too, end-to-end. They're synchronized with the audio. And RS-232 data, that can go along as well. And it's synchronized along with the audio. You send it in, comes out the same time as the audio. If the audio is delayed 2 seconds for good buffering, well, the data is delayed 2 seconds as well. Mitch, is there anything you'd like to add about the Zip One during this short commercial time before we get back into non-biased reporting?
No, you know what? I would just like to, you know, really support your enthusiasm and, you know, I am out here. I am in a situation where ISDNs have been very problematic, like I mentioned earlier in the show, and I highly recommend this particular unit for not only the public internet, but at Westwood One, we use quite a few already on our private, what we call our X-Mission MPLS network, which is a private cloud, and I can tell you that, again, my boss, Mr. Eric Weiler, is extremely fond of these, and he is an extremely picky individual when it comes to IP codecs, and he's tried them all and have had them all on his network, and I say his because he manages that MPLS network, and the number of zips that he's using and we're using is growing all the time, and I will say one other thing, that when these get back from Sochi, guess where they're going. They're not sitting in Iraq for 2 years. They're going right into a rack room somewhere in the Westwood One family.
Oh, I thought maybe they're going to your house. You're going to enjoy some music from somewhere.
not yet.
I got to tell you, over the Christmas holidays, one of our tech support guys, Brian Jones, now he lives up near the Portland, Oregon area. He's got a Zip One. And Brian has the most amazing taste in music, and he had a great Christmas music station going, and I could have streamed it on the internet, but I said, hey, why don't we stream it to my Zip One, and I'll just, you know, pipe it through the house and listen to it that way. We streamed from Portland, Oregon to Nashville, Tennessee for 5 weeks using linear PCM at 2.3 megabits per second over the public internet, and my internet may have gone down. I may have unplugged my router at some point, but these things just reconnected without asking to, just bam. And so for 5 weeks, I listened to a linear PCM stream from Portland, Oregon, with great Christmas music from Brian Jones. So yeah, the stuff does work, and the internet's getting better. It's not perfect everywhere, but it's getting better. So thanks to that long commercial, but thanks everybody for doing that. And our show's brought to you by, as I said, the Telos Zip One IP audio codec. All right. Hey, Chris Tobin, I got a little message for you. You've done plenty of work with the folks at MusicCam, and I had a nice experience earlier this week where we got a Zip One and a Suprema IP to talk to each other using MPEG Layer 2. And excellent. The people involved were just delighted with that operation. You want to speak to your experience with IP audio, and then we'll get back to Mitch?
Sure. Well, yeah, my experience, as Mitch knows, we did some experimenting way back in the day I'm finding more and more that the IP audio is a great solution you can use for many things. As you found out, Kirk, with Brian Jones, if you have the proper link in between, I'll just call it that, you can do a lot. And you know what? 2 megabits or PCM uncompressed audio over the internet, we'll call it, is not impossible. The trick is, do you have the proper endpoints? And in your case, you probably have an ISP provider who gives you the bandwidth in a proper way. Mitch is located at the International Broadcast Center with the folks at NBC, who are most likely using, I'm sure, fiber across the Atlantic back to the States. And they've parsed out the bandwidth they need, and they've just set it up so that the switches, whether it be Cisco or, well, who else is left out there? There's a Bay Networks and the others that are gone. But if you set up the switches properly, manage them with the packet and packet control where you should, it'll be just like ISDN or a T1. And then I'll tell you, I've been doing more stuff with IP in the last 6 months than I have in the last 6 years. And it's been, it's just wild what you can do. And as Mitch is finding out, the ISDN is, it's basically, it's limited. It's switched network. It's not a packet switch and a circuit switch, that is. And the things are changing. So I'm pretty excited.
I think we're going to see a day. Well, we know the internet has just gotten better and better. Heck, I used to be on dial-up back in the mid-90s when I worked for Scott Studios. I lived in Dallas, and dial-up was the only option. And it's just gotten better and better and better. Here at my house, I've had DSL and I've had cable, and the cable has gotten better and better. And so we're living in a world that's more and more dependent upon it. And yes, I know there's fits and starts. There's still providers out there who don't get it, or there are consumers who don't get it either. Maybe they're using a bad router or a poor setup, or you've got 7 BitTorrent clients running on your network with literally thousands of people around the world hitting your router asking for a bit of a file from BitTorrent. Please don't do that if you want real-time audio and low jitter. These are all things we're learning about, and I'm delighted about where all this is headed. It's a good place. And TV networks are running 1080p video across the public internet to backhaul video, and it's a good thing, and we're going to a good place. All right, Mitch Glider. So for the next few days, Mitch, you're going to be involved daily, I'm sure, with trying to make sure problems don't happen, and then really fast solving them when they do. Tell me about what you're looking forward to in the next few days as the Olympics games get started there.
Okay, so what's going to happen starting tomorrow? Really, tomorrow will be the last day I think that me and Mr. Akey will probably come in together and leave together. I want to get back to it in a minute because Chris. Chris Tobin and I did my first Olympics back in 2002. But essentially what will happen is I'll come in around 8 o'clock in the morning, Sochi time, and then Zach will probably cross over with me somewhere between 11, 12, 1, something like that. And then he'll have to stay into the early hours to help Mr. Eby record and edit the long-form show. So essentially, we go into fireman mode where we have to verify our connectivity. Like I was telling you before, check in remotes, whether it's on an access or a 4-wire from the venue, because a lot of these people will do live hits for these updates that are happening 3 times an hour. So, it's going to be our job to make sure that that's all ready. And there are there's a lot of people working in this our studios, so there's my computer's not printing, or I can't get on the internet, or just really day-to-day support that any broadcast engineer today has to wear in terms of the amount of hats that you wear when you work in a broadcast environment. So essentially that's what we are. We've become firemen. The place is done. It looks great. We take a lot of pride in kind of making the place look a lot nicer than it really should. But that's just the way I was brought up as a remote engineer. And what I wanted to mention is that when I did my first Olympics with Chris, that was when I first got into utilizing an intercom system along with an audio router to create a way to talk to venues and remotes prior to them going on the air by looping the 4 wires through an old McCurdy 9500. And of course, now I'm using a 32KD with an ICM32, which me and Chris take complete credit for the design and implementation. Ed, Fritz, Al Salcy, if you're listening. And we have a picture at the NAB where they got the best pick of me and Chris standing next to that ICM-32 because the endless ball breaking, if you excuse the pun, until they made that product. So that's that whole backstory. And, you know, me and Chris together kind of developed the whole system that Westwood One uses right now. So that's it. We're firemen, Kurt. We sit around and, but I will tell you, there is work to be done. We do a lot of as-built documents and documenting what we've changed, what we want to change for the next one, lists of everything from tools that I forgot to equipment to very serious new designs for the IT network that Zach's been working on and things like that. So that's really what we do with our time is try to plan for the next one. And also, as a lot of remote engineers know, you're planning for your exit the minute you get here. You want to.
What does that mean? You mentioned that to me when we talked the other night. What does that mean to plan for the exit?
Okay. When the final flame goes out, there is a mad rush. And in some cases, there are restrictions on how long certain parts of the IDC can be inhabited, or we have to get how quickly we have to get out. So, you know, what we do is we try to arrange our road cases and our hampers and things like that, and the way that we run our wires in such a way that the wires that are cut and run are kind of set up one way, and the wires that we want to retrieve, like the multi-pair Cat 5s with the RJ21s on the, I don't want to leave them. You know, not only is it an expensive wire, but it's a lot of labor to make it. So we start talking about that night. Me and Zach will stay up all night, likely, and do 90% of the packing. And get everything set up, and then maybe come back and do a couple of quick things. We fly home the day after that, so we have one day to pack, and we have one day, and then we leave. Now we set it up in 2.5 weeks, right? And we pack it up in 12 hours.
It's well choreographed, Kirk. Trust me, it's not something you take lightly.
Chris Tobin, Mitch, you were involved
you plan out the cable layout in advance. Yeah. You know which ones are going to leave, which ones are going to take. If you add anything during the event, you know where to edit and not to, and make sure that you keep in mind what you're going to take and cut and run. And it's, I will say, it's a daunting task to do everything in 12 hours and to meet that deadline. It's wild.
Mitch, compare this year's Olympics. You've been to Olympics before, right?
Yes, I personally did 2002 with Chris, who was the engineer in charge for that particular remote. And then I was at 2004 and 2006. And then I stopped attending but still was in charge of the engineering. Since then, there was China, there was Vancouver, and there was London. So China was kind of not really the typical setup that we did. And then Vancouver was more like what we did in the previous Vancouver, and then London last year, where Zach Akey did this particular remote with Wally Tinkin, who was one of the senior engineers at Westwood One. He's now retired. So Zach had a lot of firsthand experience out in London. He's really the reason why the remote is what it is today, is because of his suggestions and his hard work and his skill set. His SAS skill set is tremendously high. His IT skill set is extremely high, and his organizational skills. So I just had to give a shout out for Zach and make sure everybody knows out there in the community of remotes that there's a new young engineer out there that is really taking things on by storm. He has the right combination of old school training along with the new technology. So, you know, hats off to Mr. Akey. And he did London, and now he's here with us. And we are also planning Rio. That is what else we do. We talk to some of the other NBC people. We can get information about some of the logistics there already. They're having meetings. NBC has meetings at this Olympic to discuss Rio. So it's kind of, you're always looking ahead everywhere, everywhere from thinking about the pack the day you walk in to thinking about what's going to happen next time. You know, we think about, like, what equipment's going to stay in the rack and who's going to try to, you know, take stuff away from us, and you know, then we're going to have to fight for money when it's time to, you know, to come back. So most of the times, we're very protective of the rig, as I like to call it. So that's really the whole story. It's a cycle. It's and the 2 years goes by so quickly. And Westwood One does have the rights for the next two Olympics. So you know.
In our few remaining minutes, Mitch, I wonder if you and Chris might have a bit of a conversation, again, comparing your technical setup today and where you think it might go in the future with where it's been in the past. Obviously, IP Audio is a player now, and it probably wasn't so much 4 years ago, and especially 4 years before that. You guys have any thoughts on where we're going for this kind of coverage, technically?
Well, I'll start, and I promise, Chris, I'll let you get a word in edgewise. I promise. last time, we were primarily a T1 backhaul with Interplex equipment and just an ISDN for backup, and we were using Rock 10 consoles, which are the old Logitech consoles, and we were using, I'm going to say, we were using the DigiCart system to play commercials that were pre-recorded, and that was, and we built it on the spot because it was right after 9/11, and me and Chris planned it. And we took a bunch of equipment and a bunch of connectors and wires, and we built it right there. And, you know, now it's a whole different story in terms of how we prep for it. And I'll let Chris, you know, add his comments on that.
Okay. All right. Well, sorry, I was doing two things at once as Mitch was handing it off to me. Well, Mitch is right. We did have the older technology, I'll call it analog, and a little bit of digital here and there. I think future, moving forward, definitely IP. I think we're going to see more use of fiber interconnect between devices. I also would like to see, as I know I've done it and played with it, it's pretty cool to do, touchscreen technology to replace the desks or the consoles. And that way you could really have yourself a flexible setup in a studio, or an edit booth or edit suite. And I see moving forward just multicasting. You know, like Mitch is saying, they're serving 300 plus affiliates. Well, wouldn't it be cool if right from the venue, you multicast the report stream over an IP connection, out it goes somewhere. Maybe it becomes a MPLS network provided by the network for affiliates to be part of. Rather than an affiliate having their own local ISP, they pay a service charge or a cost to be an affiliate to the network, and now that MPLS circuit gets dropped to their building. And now you've got a private virtual connection. And all of a sudden, the opportunities expand. These are things I've been talking to people about, but a lot of folks think it's nuts. But then again, as Mitch pointed out, 10 years ago, we talked about a few things and people said it was nuts, and today he's using a Comrex access in a venue for doing stuff that people would have been like, no way, you can't make it happen. So,
hey, Chris, I think you've just come up with the topic for the next show is, what's Chris Tobin going to suggest when satellite distribution is either too expensive or no longer practical? Well, I think, you know, there lies at least a couple of shows, because I know that your head and the way that you think forward is probably already there, because, you know, I that's a whole other conversation. But, I agree with Chris 100%, by the way. We've already talked about things like, touchscreen surfaces and stuff like that as well. And, you know, I will point out that we recently did the Grammy remote out of the Staples Center, and Gary Klein and his Cumulus crew were married with the Westwood One Radio Row crew for the first time, and they used iPads with an Axia system. And I'm sure you're aware of this.
I designed the idea, not the actual.
So the interesting concept is that. We love that concept. And Gary, I think, is very interested in my 25-pair Cat5e multi-pair distribution system that I have. Now, he didn't say that to me personally, but I know that he was in Tampa and he was checking it out. And, we've talked quite a bit. And, I'm hoping maybe one day to be able to work with that system using my cabling distribution. But to Chris's point, you know, they were using an iPad instead of a 367 and stuff like that. I don't really know the particulars because I wasn't on the remote, but I just spoke to my personal friend, Anthony Vitiello, who's the engineer out on the West Coast, who said that I would have just had a a technical. It would have been a technical dream. I just watered down my thoughts. Thank you, America. So you know, I'm very excited about the touchscreen situation, Chris. I agree with you. The fiber situation, I couldn't agree with you more. A matter of fact, in London, Zach just passed me a little note to remind me that the four-wire commentary positions were delivered to Zach via fiber and a MUX in a little four-space rack that sat on top of our rack. And the story goes that they handed him a MADI output or something along those lines and said, here you go. And Zach was like, oh, no. You're going to go get me some analog cards, and I'm going to plug them into my router. And so the story goes. But they, this particular case, we did not get fiber. We got some copper, but that's another story. But, you know, I agree with Chris all the way. It's all about IP distribution. I think there's going to be a way for an MPLS to kind of – I think there's going to be a way, and there is a way, obviously, to VPN into an MPLS network for remotes and stuff like that, or to get a carrier to drop a big pipe in to an MPLS. The problem is it takes 3 months right now to get a big MPLS drop. They got to get that down to 3 weeks or 2 weeks, and then they can. Then people are going to start using IP all the time. When they can start delivering quality IP lines the way they deliver an ISDN line, well, then we're going to be in a new world.
And gentlemen, with that, we're going to have to wrap it up. Chris Tobin, you got any very last comments to toss in for us?
No, I'm good. I think we've covered all bases. I don't want to extend anything more than what we've done, but it's been a lot of questions have been raised with this netcast.
Yeah, I guess so. And well, the good Chris, news is...
go ahead. I was going to say, Chris, what you really should have said is, well, you know, Mitch never lets me get a word in endwise anyway, so the hour's up, so that's it.
Hey, No, Kirk, so. You're the guest. You're more than happy
Kirk
to take,
Mitch,
you know, say what you have to get the point across and tell people to educate and inform. That's not a problem. I'm just here in case the connection should be lost because of crazy things in that part of the world, and then Kirk and I can step back in and continue on the conversation.
That's right.
And get a word in edgewise.
I know anybody at NBC, like the Baker Boys, that could possibly take care of things that might be a problem with IP while you're talking to us. No, I'm just saying.
it's not like you know Dave Mazza or anything like that.
Right, right, exactly. Sorry. Hey, Dave, it's good. Hey, how's it going? Listen, by the way, that circuit, yeah, I know. Okay, thanks, Click. Yeah, no problem.
Lots of inside baseball here, folks. Hey, you've been watching This Week in Radio Tech, our 200th episode. Woohoo! 4 years. Whoever thought we'd be here for four? Whoever thought that Chris Tobin, Chris Tarr, and Tom Ray would put up with me for that long? And Andrew. I mean, I send him a bottle of booze every now and then, and he's happy. But you know, if I didn't do that, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be here or not. Thanks very much to Telos Systems and the Telos Zip One for sponsoring. Now connected over 5.5 hours to Hong Kong, and that's just because we just got the router set up right, and it's pretty cool. I thank them very much, the folks at Telos, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Thanks, Mitch Glider, for checking in and being with us for an hour of your beauty rest time from Sochi. I appreciate you very much, sir. Thank you.
It's my pleasure to be here again, and I really enjoy this, and I tried to keep my head still and not blink as much, so you guys out there have to let me know how I did.
You did great. And Chris Tobin, you look great too, man. You're not that place you're in there will never do as a TV set. It's a little.
Well, it's an integration company. They do a lot of stuff, and like I said, it's video, it's audio, it's RF, satellite downlinks, satellite uplinks, microwave point to point. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on here, so it's pretty cool. So several projects I'm involved in, so I like it.
Well, good deal. Stay warm there in New York. We just had a blast of cold and flurries, and you might be getting it next. All right. Thanks very much to Andrew Zarian back at the GFQ headquarters in Queens, New York, on the Guys from Queens GFQ network. Be sure you check out all of the fantastic podcasts, netcasts on the GFQ network. No matter what your tastes are, you will find something to love. I promise you. We'll see you next week for show number 201, next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.